Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America. Anyone could light a candle. Just like a flower in the rain. You are unique, the same. Each step you take.
Welcome to Our Sacred Journey with your host, Audrey Katagawa. Our program is designed to bring you inspiration, new perspectives, and experiences of love, compassion, and kindness in action. Our guests are global citizens who live and manifest their values, principles, and ideals. Come share in their activism and values that are making positive contributions to humanity. Now, here is Audrey Katagawa.
Good Monday afternoon to all of our listeners. We just love Mondays and starting off our work week with inspiring guests. Today, we have as our special guest, Professor Mutombo Kulu Nsenga. And this is Audrey Kitagawa, your host of Our Sacred Journey. Dr. Mutombo Kulu Nsenga is a poet, a human rights activist, and a teacher of global spirituality and interreligious dialogue, with 20 years of teaching experience in various American universities. An international scholar with a deep passion and compassion for the voiceless and the marginalized, he has traveled to more than 15 countries, gaining insights on the categorical imperative of spirituality without borders. An associate tenured professor in the Department of Religious Studies at California State University Northridge since 2003, he created the Bumuntu Peace Institute in order to foster the consciousness of peace and global solidarity in Central Africa. He is engaged in the protection of human rights and women's empowerment and intends to bring quality education to poor children in the most desolate areas of the Democratic Republic of Congo while fighting the root causes of poverty. Professor, to help us create the sacred space for our program, is there a prayer that you would like to share with us?
Thank you very much, Audrey. I would like to make a brief invocation in the African spirit. We know in Africa that the dead are not dead. They are in the wind, they are in the heart, they are in the breast of the woman, they are in the child which is wailing. The dead are not dead. During this broadcast, we remember all the people who have died in the Congo. We invoke the ancestors to protect the living. Invoke the spirit and the spirit of the Supreme Being to help the people of the Congo and all the people of goodwill around the globe who are trying to help Congo come out of the quagmire, misery, poverty, and disease.
Thank you so much for that beautiful invocation. Now, Professor, you know, I really want to thank you for returning to Our Sacred Journey, because this is the third time that we are very privileged to have you share with us the updates of your work in the Congo. The first time you came on our program last year, you indicated that you would take a one-year sabbatical in the Congo. And the second program, I actually recorded with you in the Congo as I was there at your request to meet the people and study your wonderful initiatives. Now you're back from the Congo, and I wanted to hear from you again as to what was accomplished in your year there and what's going on there. So first, please share with us about your teaching initiatives there.
Thank you very much, Audrey. For our listeners, let's just remind them that we are talking about Congo, a country of 70 million people, and the suffering of the Congo is well known internationally. Congo is a country also full of mineral, where people are nonetheless very poor. So having been privileged to study in the United States and to have a job, I decided to go back to the Congo to help, of course, I'm a teacher, and while development is very important, but we start with initiatives in the field of education. As I noted, Congo is huge, so we decided to focus on North Katanga, which is one of the poorest region in the Congo, and the area of Kamina. Kamina is a small town of 250,000 people around, near a military base, and it's surrounded by several villages. Now, it's only recently that universities have been created in Kamina. There is a UNICAM, University of Kamina, and then there is an initiative, the Methodist Church, to have an institute of higher learning called ESP in French, Institut Supérieur Pédagogique, and then there is the very young Methodist University. So, as you know, fighting poverty, disease in Africa, all these are very, very complex issues. So we just said, well, let's begin with education. You know, as we say, to educate a woman is to educate a nation. This is true for issues of women's rights, but also for the whole nation. Every development begins with education. And as you know, because of war and poverty, and people, students don't have money to pay school, they require fees. So there are many people who drop out. So access to education is a key, and many do not have access. And those who have access, as I said, Kamina is a small town lost in the bush. Congolese who have finished the university, they always like to leave the bush and go to big towns, Lubumbashi, or to the capital city of Kinshasa. That's a way for them to emerge, to move forward. As a result, you do not have many qualified teachers in the bush. So our presence in Kamina then is making a difference. Having a PhD and living there, especially in the Methodist University where no teacher has a PhD, so we are bringing some help. So that's what we do, is to support those existing universities. We also work with some high schools. So there is, for instance, a Catholic high school, Lycée Maïdio, which has 1,000 girls. It's kind of the only elite school in the area. So we work with that, train teachers, teach. As you said, I spent a whole year teaching there. And you also have to write the textbooks because you practically do not have any meaningful library in the area. So while we teach, we also try to work with our friends to bring, you know, they needed school furniture, you know, teaching material. We technically have to equip the universities. And so that's, in a nutshell, what we are.
You know, while I was in the Congo with you, I saw that you personally gave funds to support certain young people to help pay for their tuition. So how many young people are you personally supporting?
Thank you very much, Audrey. We are supporting 50 in the area. We have a kind of academy. You remember that Oprah Winfrey has her academy in South Africa.
Right.
The Academy of Leadership. It's a kind of idea that we are trying to replicate there. So to train these young people who are going to be the leaders of tomorrow. And of course, we train them since I was training in the U.S. myself. So we try to provide a different type of education to them. There is training in the school where I teach, but there is also extra murals kind of activity where we do training outside the classroom. So that is very important. It's to prepare the future leaders, but also from the point of view of democracy, what we try to do is to help more young, smart children from very poor families. Even though everybody is poor in Africa, but, you know, if somebody, his father is a medical doctor, engineer, we are not paying. So we pay for those who are poor. The idea is to bring everybody, you know, so that we do not have the prevalent situation where you have 1 or 2% of people who are extremely rich and have access to education, they go to study in Europe, in the United States, come back and they reproduce the same kind of oppressive system. And then the majority of people have almost nothing. So that's the kind of idea we do have in the way that we recruit these youngsters.
That's very valuable education then. And I also understand that there's no such thing as free education in the Congo. And there are many costs associated with going to school, like the payment of uniforms, books, tuition, and even teacher salaries have to be paid for by the parents or sponsors of the children who are going to school. And since so many of the children are so poor, how are the children able to attend school?
Thanks so much, Jody, for raising that issue. That's a major issue. So in theory, education is available. The UN, they've been struggling and doing things. But, you know, to attend the school in the Congo, you have to pay everything from elementary school. So as a result, even though many students go to school, but they drop out and they don't finish the school precisely because of all these costs and fees. I mean, like $100, it may seem meaningless, but we are in a country where most people who are working, going to work from 7 a.m. to 4 or 5 p.m., the salary is between $40 and $100 a month. As a result, many families cannot afford to pay for schooling. So, and because of that, many children drop out, unfortunately.
And also, it doesn't seem as if they have any lunch program or, you know, meal program. Because when I was in the Congo, I saw that many of the children were very weak and, you know, had their heads on the desk. And the teachers explained that because the children have nothing to eat and they come to school and cannot concentrate or study well. So there are multiple problems in being able to not only keep the children in school, but keep them healthy and, you know, being able to pay attention to the lessons because they're so malnutritioned.
That's very very true. And in fact, we will come back to this later on when we talk about challenges. When I was there, I was forced to buy food for my students, believe it or not, because we had these accelerated programs since I was there for a short period of time. So we had classes from like 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., sometimes all the way to 6 p.m. And at some point, I was just forced with the few money I had to buy food.
That takes us into the issue of healthcare. And I'm sure our listeners would really like to know about the healthcare situation in the Congo.
Thank you, Audrey. The healthcare is just terrible. First of all, you do not have good insurances. If somebody goes to the hospital, they have to pay from their pocket. And any medication coming from the West is more expensive there than here. And we get these things, so people just dying because they can't afford to pay the doctor or to pay the prescribed medication. And also because of war, and so difficulties just pile up on. And it's very, very terrible, the health situation in the Congo. This is a region where you have malaria, typhoid, and all kinds of diseases, and hepatitis B, etc. In fact, I must say here, when Audrey was introducing me, we are doing these things not because simply we have the will to do so, is because we get help. And Audrey in particular has been providing us with boxes of medical supply, which turn out to be very, very, very useful on the ground. And I would like here to thank her and the Holy Spiritual Family, Light of Awareness, and as well as the Halloran, Harry Halloran, the Halloran Philanthropy, and the Dialogue Institute, head by Professor Swilo, have been supporting the education, but the healthcare has been mainly Audrey who has helped us. So this is a very, very important issue in the Congo. By the way, I must add here that people survive sometimes because they know some medicinal plants.
Well, let's get to the medicinal plants after our break because that's a very important issue. So you're listening to Professor Mutumbu Kulu Senga. We're going to go on a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
The Voice America 7th Wave Channel. We are in the midst of a time of vast opportunity on our planet right now. If we can master ourselves to have our minds be our allies, we can then lead the authentic lives we desire. But to get beyond the everyday mundane life chosen for us by our minds, we need tools. Sometimes we're not aware of the subconscious thoughts, beliefs, and conclusions our minds have made, and this is where we need the help. Tune in to Create Your Best Life Ever with your host, Allison J. Kay, and receive those tools for clearing and healing and feel what else is possible. Listen Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on 7th Wave.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Explore subconscious programs, belief systems, and past life memories that may be sabotaging your life. Join host Dorian Light on her show, All About You, as she helps you to shift, change, and heal your life. Each week, Dorian does a light session using psychic energetics and the language of light to energetically shift and clear negative patterns you have stored regarding that week's topics. Step into the realm of infinite possibilities for your life. All About You airs live Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific on 7th Wave.
You are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Katagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now, back to Our Sacred Journey.
Welcome back to Our Sacred Journey. You're listening to Professor Kulu Senga, Mutumbu Kulu Senga. Thank you so much, Professor. You were just about ready to talk about medicinal plants, so can you proceed?
Yes, Audrey, thank you very much. I was saying Congo, you remember that we talked about hope against hope in the Congo. So there is some hope and people survive thanks to these medicinal plants. But the only problem is that when people burn the bush, and this, which is an environmental issue here, all these plants are also burned. And I think if we could have people to help us create kind of health center where modern medical doctor trained in modern medicine could work hand in hand with traditional healers, and then bring in people who studied agronomy to plant, to make like botanical garden and plant and save these medicinal plants, that would be very, very useful. People use, of course, there are things which are not healed and they have to look for modern medicine. But I think this is something which needs to be explored on the ground and we would be very interested to do so.
Well, do you find that there is a rapid loss of these traditional plants because of the burning process or the people losing knowledge about the health benefits of certain plants and so are not making it a point to continue to grow them and plant them?
Oh, yes. It's a combination of many factors. First of all, of course, the burning. And the other thing is that for some strange reasons, the way Christianity was taught in Africa was that a traditional healer was just a bunch of witches. In fact, they were called witch doctors. So people were told not to follow them and not to take the cure because that would be betraying their faith. So there is a whole history of people disdaining, having disdain for these traditional healer, and as a result, even some traditional healer who converted to Christianity then abandoned that. But I heard that because of economic crisis, just as a de facto situation, not having access to modern medicine, suddenly people had to go back to these traditional healers. So both do exist, but you will find the people on the ground who do not trust this medicine.
Well, you know, I was very surprised when I was in the Congo, notwithstanding the very powerful and profound influence of Christianity there, that there is also goes hand in hand this very powerful belief in sorcerers and witches, etc. And, you know, I have heard people in very high levels and highly educated people also say that, you know, misfortune has come because someone has been bewitched. And so can you reconcile this kind of dichotomy that seems to exist in the Congo?
Oh, yes. I mean, this belief in witchcraft is something deep. I witnessed that myself after having spent almost 20 years in the U.S. When I went to teach, my students believe in that. So it's one of these things which also people need good training, some kind of this enlightened spirit. I'm not saying forces of evil do not exist, but there is a kind of paralyzing belief which makes people afraid. If I work well in school, people are going to say that the witches are going to destroy me. If I grow food, I have a larger field. People are going to bewitch me, and so on and so on. So this is something, in fact, our presence there, we teach is not only just teaching, I don't know, human rights and interreligious dialogue and literature. We also reflect, we teach critical thinking skills and how to deal with traditional customs, which one are beneficial, and the absolute one which become like a kind of obstacle to progress, what to do with that. So that's what we do there.
Well, I really applaud the work that you are doing in the Congo, and I wanted to raise this very important matter, and that's the status of women in the Congo, and especially the sexual violence that seems to be so prevalent against the women, as well as the sexually transmitted diseases that they experience as a result of so much sexual violence. So this has been an ongoing problem for many years, and of course has been exacerbated in the many long, prolonged wars going on there. So can you please update us on the status of women?
Thank you very much. I think this is a serious issue. A lot has been done by the UN, but many things remain just on the book. You need serious structure, especially a possibility for women to bring somebody to trial. So in some cases it succeeds, but by and large, I think the Congo has a very, very long way to go to ensure the protection of women. The area where we work, there is harassment, there is rape, but it's also an area near a military base. And there is, from talking with my friend, medical doctor, there is a high percentage of HIV and hepatitis B in that region. So this is a very, very serious issue.
So what kind of benefits has the UN brought to the women in the Congo by their presence there, if any? Because when I was there, you know, the women seemed to be almost inconsolable in their grief that they did not feel that there was any justice for them or any recourse that they had in any kind of legal system or from any guiding institution to be able to address their grievances.
Yes, I think, by the way, the UN itself has been part of the problem. Some UN workers have been involved in the rape of women, even in making pornographic films. This is something which even happened in Kamina. But I would say that what they have done is to encourage, for instance, the fact that any relationship with a girl below 18 is considered rape is something which is taken seriously. They have encouraged, you know, the lawyers and the justice system in the Congo, and this is something very taken very, very seriously. In Kamina, there are many men who are in prison because of that. The other thing is with regard to sexually transmitted disease, I don't know if the UN or World Health Organization, they succeeded in this traditional society to make people aware of using, let's say, safe sex, so condoms. and they are sold everywhere. And youngsters have learned about that. That is something which can help them to curb sexually transmitted diseases. So there are some stuff which are being which are happening, but of course it's a human endeavor, and the UN is not perfect, and sometimes they also do bad things.
But has the is there any difficulty with the, because the Christian Church, particularly the Catholic Church, is very influential. Has there been any difficulty with being able to have condoms distributed to the people in light of particular theological teachings or biases with respect to use of condoms?
Yes, I think the Catholic Church is always opposed, but the African people have learned how to live without that. They go to church, they listen, and they do what they want. So these things are sold in pharmacies, and people get them outside. Obviously, you cannot distribute stuff like that in Catholic school, or even make a talk about that in Catholic school. But in the city, they are everywhere.
I see. So, I really appreciate hearing about, the issues with respect to women and how the dichotomies that are on the ground can be resolved. And, of course, we understand that change takes place sometimes slowly, but, we always continue to do what we can to provide good information, current information. So with respect to economic globalization, this has really taken the whole world by storm. And can you explain to us what economic globalization has done to the Congo?
Thanks very much, Audrey. But if you give me just 1 second to add something to the health issue, something
sure.
I don't want to forget. We do have a whole team of medical doctors who are being helped, I guess, by the World Health Organization about HIV. So they talk about on TV and they test. So testing is a very important thing. So now people are into being tested to know if they have HIV or not. So I just want to throw that in. Now, with regard to globalization, as you know, Congo is a country which is extremely, extremely rich in natural resources. And as you have seen yourself from being there, people, unfortunately, are very, very poor. This is the contrast that we face in the Congo. So globalization is coming, and I talked with many people involved in mining companies in Lubumbashi. People look at these things with tremendous fear. There are few people who are really, really getting rich. And because Congo is traditionally a French-speaking country, sometimes multinational companies coming, they have to hire people who speak English, so from Zambia and Zimbabwe, which creates an issue that a problem, so that local people don't even find a decent job there. And the land is being taken over for mining companies, and you have pollution. So this is something which is very dramatic. You recall when you were there, we met this minister in Lubumbashi of health, and Lubumbashi has reached such a point that you do have many women giving birth to children without head, without hand, mouth. We even saw some happening in Kamina. This because the land has been poisoned so much, and this is a process we started a long time ago. And of course, Congolese talk, but they are kind of powerless really to take real action. And I think this is one of these cases where really people will need strong help from the international community. So I understand globalization is helping to break the walls of tribalism. People are moving into this global community. Some people can have access to money, but other people are losing land. So it's kind of mixed bag.
Well, we're going to have to go on another break, but I want to continue this very important conversation. So you are listening to Professor Mutumbu Nkulu Senga. Don't go away. We'll be right back on our sacred journey.
Thank you.
The Voice America 7th Wave Channel. Be extraordinary. Be the change.
Are you in tune with yourself? Listen every week for Ecstaticism, Embracing the Journey to Awakening, featuring host Sherry Lynn. When we understand that we are not alone in this world and have infinite love available to us at all times, we can be ecstatic and call upon the assistance we need to reconcile and release our past, fear, and addictions. Listen to Ecstaticism, Embracing the Journey to Awakening, live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel. Joy, bliss, and ecstaticism is our God gift to experience. Be joy, be peace, be love.
Have you discovered your true self yet? When we clearly understand how we create our reality, we can develop empathy and love for our humanity and that of others. Listen to Explorations in Consciousness with Dr. Joe. Your host, Dr. Joe Mancini, has spent years helping individuals get unstuck and find direction in their lives. Find out more by tuning into our expert guests and participants on Explorations in Consciousness, Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
Which voice do you hear? The voice of your ego or the voice of your spirit? The one you listen to can determine your entire future, your decisions, your existence. Listen to Two Voices with Dr. Nick and Reverend Linda Martin. We'll identify, discover, and explore your two voices and help you to determine how they shape your life. It's an experience which can allow you to transform your ego, hear the voice of spirit more clearly, and create the life you were meant to live. Two Voices is heard Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America 7th Wave.
This is the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
You are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Katagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now, back to Our Sacred Journey.
Welcome back to Our Sacred Journey with Professor Mutumbu Kulu-Senga. So, Professor, you were sharing with us about the birth defects and the obvious health problems arising from the toxicities that are being spun off by the mining company. So can you continue along that vein and share more with us?
Yes, thank you. As I was saying, this is a major, major issue. I discussed with some people who are working for the mining companies, and they told me that when they get these things, they test them, even in their own office, they have really, really to pay attention to be protected against these kind of radioactive materials. The city of Likasi and Lubumbashi are extremely polluted, and we do not see anything serious in terms of reducing that. So people know about it, but no serious action is being taken. It's like mining companies are just interested in making a quick profit. And of course, they will always find local politicians who also will sign documents just to have their own benefit. So this is something very, very serious. And the region where we work used to be traditionally agricultural, but they also found minings there. And there are companies which I know, Anglo-American company, and some others are also moving in. I think it would be good for people to start reflecting now to prevent what is happening. I mean, we know what is happening, for instance, in China, and China is very involved in the Congo. So these are all very, very serious problems. And I would say, well, it's very difficult to say if there is a strong benefit. At this point, many people are losing with this globalization, or they are getting serious, serious health problems. And so I think that that's the situation. But there is need to give this globalization a kind of human face, and it will take tremendous effort. Alliance between civil society in the Congo, politicians, international community, activists in the West, etc., and journalists to make things visible.
Well, you know, there's such a thing as the corporate social responsibility and corporations giving back to the communities and helping to build the communities with schools and, and starting to utilize green technologies and being mindful of the communities in which they're doing these extraction technologies. But in addition to the corporations themselves taking responsibility for all of the pollution that they're creating, what other recommendations do you have? What's the role and responsibility of government, for example?
Yes, I mean, that's, the kind of things we talk about, hope against hope. From what I have seen, people know things, and there are even laws on the book, but because of need for quick profit, many politicians in the Congo, they look the other way. And this is very, very sad and disappointing. So we can just hope for the better that step by step, as people see more, birth defect and other challenges, so then there will be a class of politicians who will be able to take strong measures and in collaboration with the international community and some multinational companies, which I know that Tenke Fungurume, this American company, is there and they say they are trying to do something, but apparently it's not enough because the birth defects are strong. There is a river. We have Kafubu and Lubumbashi rivers, and one of them is almost dead already around Lubumbashi because of pollution.
Well, that also goes into the aspect of human rights because, the right to clean water, clean air, clean environment, we can frame it within the human rights framework. And the Congo has had such a long history of exploitation, and I know you are an advocate for human rights as well as democracy. So tell me, what progress, if any, has the Congo made towards human rights and democracy, especially in light of this globalization? That is, bearing down upon the Congo?
I would say that very little progress has been made except the awareness. There is now a strong civil society. People can do demonstrations, but in the end, they change very, very little. And with regard to multinational, I do not know if the information I got is correct. In many instances, the country gets like 3 to 5%, and all the money belongs to external multinational companies. So, this is an issue, a serious issue. If you add to that the fact that many politicians are not foreigner to corruption, so there is very little which triggers down. I think what we can do is just to encourage civil society and raise awareness. I know sometimes there is alliance between Western NGOs and local people. We've seen that in Goma with regard to women. What we do in particular in Kamina is really to add to our teaching that element of awareness. We have, for instance, a set of youngsters who are studying journalism, and we want to teach them how to make videos so that they can document things. And we have our own TV program where we invite people to discuss all these issues. So I think the issue of awareness is very, very important at this point. And then youngsters could make alliances through internet and discuss with other people outside and they lobby the UN and so on.
So, I know you're very busy teaching because you're back at your job being a professor, and as such, you also have to have office hours for students to come in, and it sounded as if one student just knocked on your door and came in. So, I appreciate the fact that you're taking the time to do this program in light of your very, very busy schedule. And I just wanted to let our listeners know that Professor is one of the most popular professors on campus. He has this way with the students that's very, very, instructive, but full of information. And I feel that you're a very valued and very liked professor. So thank you for taking the time to share with us, notwithstanding your very busy schedule. So while you were in the Congo for your year sabbatical, you must have faced many challenges. And can you share with us what some of your biggest challenges were?
Oh, thank you very much. I mean, there are many, many, many challenges. Logistic, for one. Health issues. I had to be concerned about my own health. There is no good, safe drinking water in Camino. You have to buy this water sent by, I think, World Health Organization, and it's very expensive on the ground. So there is that. But what I found more challenging is to, after many years in the U.S., to work in an environment where, because many teachers have very poor salary, corruption is kind of the normal thing. Students have to pay money for anything. A student takes a test, and then there is something they call omission. The teacher can just make the paper disappear to pay money for recourse, so they will open the case, or has to pay money for that, and then they will check, and maybe the student is going to pay money again to retake the exam. So there are kind of ways of doing things I was not very much used to, and it shocked me, and sometimes it's disturbing. But since it's kind of widespread, you know, of course it puts in collision with your colleagues. So there are all kinds of challenges. And of course, especially these are young universities in the bush. There is practically no serious library and no good equipment. If you want to teach fast with PowerPoint presentation, in the middle of the presentation, the electricity is gone. So all kind of things that I faced there. But you really need to be strong to some degree to work there. And the joy of the people is something which gave me courage, because if I think about, I can't understand how a teacher can raise a family on $100 or $200 a month. And although this is Africa, but in a small town, anything more than is more expensive. Like gas for a car or a motorcycle is more expensive than here. So it's not that much money. And to see how these people survive, where do they find, besides corruption, but there is also some kind of wisdom which enables people to survive. It's something I'm looking into and learning myself, even though I was born there.
And you also were doing research while you were there, you know, because you were on sabbatical, but it's not like a vacation per se. So what were the areas of research that you were undertaking?
Oh, yes. When I was there, I had to do research on traditional culture. I also had to study the, you were talking about globalization. There is also the globalization of religion. There are new religions coming to the area, and I see how they interact with traditional spiritualities and even with Christianity and Islam. And I also wanted to start a project of an encyclopedia of traditional culture to keep the wisdom. Because as we say in Africa, when an old person dies, is an entire library which is burning. And we need to save these things before the old generations, you know, leave us. So, and there are all kinds of things, and human rights is also one area. I have all kinds of groups of teachers. I said we have our TV program, and also we even created an English club. Now, the English club here, let me say it up front, this is not about bringing British culture, Americanization. In this deeply Francophone country, learning English is a revolutionary act, because youngsters will be able to access all the many resources available on the internet, and most of these things are in English. And also, as I said, in terms of social justice and equilibrium, if people learn English in that area, so instead of companies just going to hire people from Zimbabwe or Zambia to bring them there, who will be seen as foreigner, and then tomorrow we risk to have ethnic conflict. So it's good also to train local people so that when they land, it's taken by the mining companies, at least the children can have the opportunity to work there. So we do all kinds of things, and we are
Well, let's continue our conversation on what more things you're doing after we come back from our break. So you're listening to Professor Mutumbu Kulu Senga. We'll be right back.
Visionary. This is the Voice America 7th Wave Channel. Step into the doorway to conscious choice, greater health, and well-being. Attain the balance that you've been seeking. Tune in and turn on 1111 Talk Radio. Feed the mind. Embrace positively. Release the tension. Step out of fear. Host Simran Singh will help you broaden your mind and open your heart toward a greater understanding of how to take charge of your life. 1111 Talk Radio is here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on 7th Wave Network. 1111 Talk Radio, because shift happens.
Who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? How do I get there? If you're searching for the answers to these and other spiritual questions, you can look within, and you can tune into The Open Door. Our program will expand your awareness of the teachings of the Ascended Masters, offer you practical tools that promote self-mastery and personal freedom, and provide an unerring pathway for graduating from Earth Schoolroom. The Open Door, with host Tom Schumacher and Terry Kennedy, is broadcast live every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
The Mayan calendar tells us that we will be entering into a 260-day opportunity for us to engage in conscious co-creation with Great Spirit. How will we prepare ourselves for this exciting and unprecedented time in Earth's history? Peter Tung has dedicated over 20 years of his life's work to exploring that which is beyond understanding. Peter will help increase your awareness and education on this enlightening transformation in consciousness. Awakening to Conscious Co-Creation airs live Wednesdays at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on 7th Wave Network. The 7th Wave Channel on the Voice America Network.
You are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Katagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now, back to Our Sacred Journey.
Welcome back to Our Sacred Journey with Professor Mutumbu Kulu Senga. So, Professor, please continue. You were sharing with us about the challenges that you experienced in during your year sabbatical.
Yes. So I talked about the issue of corruption in the educational system. I talked about the logistics just of living there, the lack of decent library and teaching material. But I would like to add also the fact that living there and having all these smart students who cannot finish school because they cannot pay fees, this was the most disturbing thing for me. As I said, we, with the help of some friends in the U.S., yourself included, we had some money to pay for some student, but then there is a problem on how you do that, because then you create a jealousy among teachers, among students themselves. Or why such person got it and not me? So, I mean, there are all kinds of challenges that you really need to be psychologically very strong, determined, and have clear objectives in the way you go about doing things. Yes.
Yes, in light of all the challenges, you certainly do have to be strong, because the levels of frustrations can rise very quickly because the you lack so many things that many of us here in the States take for granted. Now, I wanted to ask you to go more deeply into something that you mentioned about new religions coming on the landscape. So can you tell us more about these new religions and what impact, if any, they're having on the community?
Oh, yes. Thank you. By the way, one of the things we do in Camino is also to deal with interreligious dialogue, in the sense that we would like to prevent future religious conflicts like the one we had in Nigeria and the Sudan. Islam is growing in Africa, in the Congo. When I left, it were like 3%. Now we are told they are 10%. But in the area where I work, Muslims are not so much an issue. What we get is growing independent groups of Pentecostal born-again Christians. I see on the word independent. So a pastor is starting his own church, he's raising money, telling people, you know, if you come, there is a special blessing. If you give more money, God is going to bless you. Not only you will get a job, you will win election if you want to be a senator. And we see this happening all the time. So this is why I said critical thinking is very, very needed in the area. So this new type of born-again evangelical and very, very aggressive in the way they do the evangelization. For instance, calling other, you know, religions kind of satanic, and, you know, traditional religions, although they almost disappear, but there is a revival, and they are seen, the spirit, the worship are viewed as demons, and it creates tremendous frustration. So this is what I'm seeing happening on the ground. You do have, of course, Jehovah Witnesses. You have these other independent groups I was talking about. And now we start having a few religions coming from Asia, not that many, but especially the evangelicals are in collision with other religious groups.
Well, I hope you'll be able to foster and cultivate and deepen your interreligious as well as intra-religious dialogue on the ground. And can you share with us what your plans are to continue and deepen as well as grow your work in the Congo?
Thank you very much. Before addressing that, let me finish one point on the religious front. We get also now in the Congo, almost every politician has his guru, so to speak, kind of a spiritual advisor, people telling them, God told me in a dream, don't do such and such. And this can becoming an obstacle to democracy. Now, with regard to the continuation of our work, of course, I was appointed a teacher there, so they need my presence. Of course, I have a PhD from the U.S., and we have many teachers in the area, and Camino don't have a PhD, so the university can survive, so it's not going to be closed down by the state. And I will continue going there twice a year, hoping that in a few years I may have, again, the opportunity to go there for at least a semester. And so we will continue our TV program. I have a team on the ground. I just need to raise money for that, so that it can continue with some experts, medical doctor, teachers, and students, etc. We do have our English club to run, and also our program to raise money for school fees for smart children from poor families. So meanwhile, I have to write textbooks to be used in the area, because libraries are almost inexistent. And sometimes we have to look for computers and things of that nature.
So how can our listeners help you in your work? And, you know, what are the needs of the people there that can be readily addressed with the help of the listeners?
I would say that I don't know how that can be done, if it's through this radio, if they can contact you or contact another institution. I think that school fees is something which is critical. And if people donate for school fees, we give them names and picture and the phone number, cell phone, of the family or the child being helped, so that we are out of that and they can keep in touch. Technically, it's like 300, just the basic fees for the university, 300 per year, $300 for university students, $100 for high school, and around $50 for elementary school. But that does not cover books and other things. But at least with that, the state required fees are covered. The other thing is you have been already helping us. When we are on the ground, for instance, we work with medical doctors in the field of health. It's teaching, it's raising awareness, like on HIV prevention in collaboration with institutions on the ground. So medication that we can get or medical supply from the U.S. is something also important. I thought that hepatitis B and HIV and, of course, malaria are endemic and really, really prevalent in the area. Other stuff would be like used computers. This is also something which is needed. As for books, that is very difficult. We can gather so many books, but then somebody has to pay for the container to bring it to Congo. But if we have donation of money, there are priests and other people who buy books from Europe. And there is one European priest I talked to in Lubumbashi who does that, and he can buy books in French from Europe to equip these universities that we do have there.
Well, thank you so much. And very quickly, final message to our listeners that you might have for them today.
I will just say, you know, the world has become a global village. And I would say the Congo is a country we should not forget. We should remember 70 to 80% of coltan, world reserve of coltan, is found in the Congo. And it's the mineral used for our computer chips and our cell phone. I know the international community has been interested in the rape of women or all this sexual violence, and especially they are concentrated in Goma. But the country is poor. If we wait for government, governments are governments. Things go to government and sometimes they disappear. But I think people-to-people collaboration is something which is needed. It's just a matter of looking for credible institutions such as yours or the Halloran Philanthropy we work with in Philadelphia to give donation. And then with regard to money, it's tax break if somebody were to donate that.
So let's remember also the Bumuntu Peace Institute for a tax deduction for any donations made. And I really wish to express my deepest appreciation to you, Professor, for sharing with us about your year sabbatical in the Congo. And you gave all of us much food for thought and inspired us with your dedication and commitment to really help your people who have a long history of suffering and exploitation. I have shared before that you have a heart of gold, and with your love, caring, and compassion for others, it really adds to the beauty of your heart that is also very courageous in its sacrifice to give up the many comforts you have in the U.S. to return to the Congo at every opportunity. And may God bless you in the good works that you do always. And may you see many beautiful fruits arise from the seeds of love that you have planted in the Congo. Join us again next week for more inspiring conversation. This is Audrey Kitagawa, your host of Our Sacred Journey. My special guests, Professor Kulu Senga and I, bid you all a very good evening.
Thank you for being a part of Our Sacred Journey. Please join Audrey Kitagawa again next Monday at noon Hawaiian Standard Time, 3 p.m. in the West, 6 p.m. in the East, on the Voice America 7th Wave channel. This week, think about the contributions of love and compassion that you'll make and how together we can create a better, harmonious, and more peaceful world.
Just like a flower in the rain, you are.